Bhagavad Gita is a book of mankind's collected experience of and answers to life's most basic questions. Who I am? From where do I come? What is my purpose and destiny? And most practically, how do I find happiness? These podcasts originate in the lectures of Neil Bhatt, a disciple of Swami Chinmayananda. They are presented here in 20 to 30 minute segments, each covering three of the Gita's 701 verses. Welcome to Gita Wisdom for Daily Living.
We had been discussing chapter 1, Arjuna Vishad Yoga, Yoga of Arjuna's Grief. This is the opening chapter of Bhagavad Gita and gives us the context in which we'll be learning the wisdom of Bhagavad Gita. We feel that our life is filled with grief. We feel that our life is filled with confusing situations where you and I cannot come up with a clear answer of how to deal with the situations. And we tend to believe that we are the only ones who face this. The rest of the world is enjoying, everyone else has good times, they are given better situations, I am the only one who is facing these confusing situations. Bhagavad Gita clarifies by giving us the very first chapter, Arjuna Vishad Yoga, that the situations are universal. In any person's life, there never will be a clear-cut demarcation between good and evil. Good and evil are the two ends of the same spectrum. One end is completely good, another end is completely evil. Now, where we stand on that spectrum depends on our understanding about the truth, about the reality. So, the first chapter gave us the Arjuna situation. He was enthusiastic, was convinced that this is a righteous war. This war ought to be fought to set the score correct, not only for his own family, but for the society. But once he came to the battlefield, and he was facing the two armies, and he positioned himself in a situation where he can gauge the situation correctly, and brought it by Krishna saying, now look at all the Kurus who are gathered here to fight this war. Just an indication that pay attention, don't be overconfident, don't go very easy in understanding the situation. And once he does that, he obviously realized the enormity of challenge. Now we face the same situations in life. We are enthusiastic, we are confident, we are convinced about our purpose. But once we face the real situation, we start finding details which we have not heard about, we have not thought about before. And at that time, it is our test how convinced we are about our own convictions, our own path on which we have decided to walk. If we are not completely firm in our understanding, the situation will shake us up. Arjuna demonstrating that he was not completely ready to face the situation. So once he sees his uncles and teachers and all the great people whom he respects and revere are on the other side, he starts questioning. He starts losing his confidence and goes to a point where he can't even stand on his feet. So we have seen that he first said, it is better to run away from this battle than fight this evil-minded Kauravas. And he was seeking Krishna's approval. But so far, Krishna has not given him any approval. So he made all the arguments why he shouldn't be fighting this war. First he said that these people are evil-minded. They don't understand the consequences of the war. But we wise people understand it, and therefore we should avoid this war. They say, what good can come out by killing all these good people whom I respect and revere? I do not see anything good coming out of it. This is something even today's society we face. Obviously there are wars going on in the world, and when we see the civil casualty, when we see the people dying, we really don't understand what good is ever going to come out of this war. And it is very true that the war is very messy, the war is very destructive, and nothing good can come out of it unless we compare it against if this war is not fought. How evil will prevail? Then you can make a judgment call whether this war is worth fighting or not. So Arjuna goes through his arguments. First he said that this war will destroy families. People will die. Your family will be destroyed. When the family is destroyed, then the family values will be destroyed. In any given society, the family is the unit of the society. When the unit is disrupted, the society will be disrupted. All the family values as well as the values of that community. In this case we call a caste of that jati will be destroyed. And when both the kula dharma and jati dharma are destroyed, certainly the society will go through hellish time. He uses the Vedic ritual of Shraddha, which obviously we continue in our tradition in India, that every year we offer pinda and udaka, water and rice ball, as showing our gratitude to our ancestors for laying down this foundation for us to live a better life. And he says that those ancestors will be deprived of those rights. And once that happens, the dislayer of the society, slayer of the families, in turn the slayer of the community, in turn the slayer of this whole tradition, will go to hell. And obviously in normal translation, we obviously think that this is about our belief about the swarga and naraka. But we have understood in our life that there are times where we feel we are in heaven, and there are times we feel we are in hell. So all these are my mental climates. So he makes his arguments, he is looking for Krishna's approval, but so far none of his arguments have made impression on Krishna. Krishna hasn't said a word. So he makes his concluding argument in the last three verses. Doshe aitehe kulagnanam varna sankarakarakaihi utsadyante jati dharmaha kuladharmascha sasvataha. By this evil deeds of the destroyers of the family, which cause confusion of caste, varna sankarakarakaihi, it will create confusion in caste. One person from the caste will go and have relationship with the other person who is supposed to not have that. In other words, the people who are incompatible will start having relationships, and then the whole generations after that will be of not a great caliber. Utsadyante jati dharmaha kula dharmascha sasvataha. Those who are destroyed, both the jati dharma and kula dharma, which are eternal, utsan kula dharmanam manushyanam janardana narake niyatam vaso bhavati anususrama. That we have heard that it is inevitable for these men in whose families the religious practices have been destroyed. In other words, if in any family, if there is no tradition, there is no discipline, there is nothing which is laid down as the right way of living, then how that person can raise children, or how children can grow up in that family, learning right values, right way to live so they can enjoy good life. You know, we hear this all the time. He doesn't have good sanskara. Ena sanskara nathi malayane. What that really means is, he never got the guidance what is right in life. Now we understand that sanskara doesn't mean that somebody gets up in the morning and tell his children, here are my sanskars, or here are the sanskars. You know. It is how we live that our children will notice and follow us. We have learned that children follow by example. We see our little children when they're growing up. For them, their parents are the role models. If you ask a little child, what do you want to be? His answer, I want to be like my dad or like my mom. What's your mom done? My mom is a doctor, so I want to be a doctor. My mom is a social worker, so I want to be a social worker. So the people, by example, give their children guidance of what is right in life and what is accomplishments. This doesn't have to be at a greater level of a profession or accomplishments or achievements, but even the simple thing about getting up in the morning and brushing your teeth. How did we become so used to of doing that? Our dinacharya, as we call it, our day-to-day activities. Because right from the childhood, we saw elders in the family doing it, and then telling us to do it. So little child, as soon as his or her teeth come, mother will start telling him or her, go and brush your teeth before I give you food. And then it gradually becomes a habit. Once it becomes a habit, you don't have to tell him. He just won't be able to do anything without doing that activity. So gradually you're building up the habits based on the traditions in that family. But if the family does not have any traditions, family does not have a head of the family who they look up to as a role model, then these traditions will be lost. People will be doing whatever. They will be waking up at 10 o'clock in the morning, take tea before brushing his teeth, may not go to work. So all that, when somebody says, that's what we call it, a broken family. So in this case, Arjuna is pointing out that I have heard that in whose family these traditions are broken and they have become broken family, that these practices are destroyed. He calls it a religious practices. Because in our culture, there is no differentiation between religion and a day-to-day life. Everything that is important for day-to-day life is woven into our religious practices. So if you really follow our religious practices with clear understanding, your life will be well regulated according to our tradition with Trikala Sandhya. You get up in the morning, take bath, and before you do anything, you do a prayer, offer oblation to Lord Sun. Do all that, which is not only good for your spirit, it's also good for your body. It is also good for your mind. It's also good for intellect. So the whole system was designed in a manner that anything that is important and good is woven into religious practices. Over a period of time, we forgot what is the purpose of those practices, what is the meaning of those practices, and completely lost faith in it. And therefore, these religious practices we don't have faith, and they don't help us. So Arjuna says that we have heard, O Janardana, that it is inevitable for those men in whose families the religious practices have been destroyed, that to dwell in hell for an unknown period of time. Once the chain is broken of right living, once very promiscuous life we start living, there is no going back. There is no limit how far we can fall. So therefore he says, there is no telling how long that person, that family, will suffer through the hellish living right here. Ahobat mahat papam kartum vyavasita vayam yad rajya sukhalobhena hantum svachanam udyataha. Alas, oh no, as we would have expressed, we are involved in a great sin. In that we are prepared to kill our own brothers out of greed for the pleasures of kingdom. As if he has just realized that the war is fought for the domain over the kingdom. Who will have the control over the kingdom and therefore the society? So he just said, oh no, what are we doing? We are all involved in this great sin. That we are fighting this war to win over a kingdom. This is just out of pure greed that we are doing it. This obviously shows his complete lack of confidence in him. That he has lost all his reasoning power. Because all along, we have seen that he was a very rational person. He never showed any inclination for greed. And all this time when this war was planned or discussed, the greed was never a motive to fight this war. But now he uses that word that we are fighting this war for our greed for the kingdom and the pleasure of having kingdom. Which shows that he have exhausted all his logical arguments. And he is at the bottom of his barrel to make Krishna feel that, oh, Arjuna is really, really on a right path. Swamiji points out here that in Bhishma Parva, there are few verses where Yudhishthira having a similar doubts. At that time, Arjuna himself convinced him with a very solid argument that this war is not for anything but for knowing the difference between the piety and impiety. He actually convinces Yudhishthira that war is between piety and impiety, and therefore victory is certain to be had where there is full righteousness. So he had shown his wisdom before. Now he is making arguments which are completely showing his cowardice at this time. Yadi mam pratikaram asastram sastrapanayah dhartrarashtra rane hantyuhu tanme kshemataram bhavet. And his last statement, if the sons of Dhritarashtra with weapons in hand slay me in battle, unresisting and unarmed, because I have become a pacifist, I don't want to fight, so I will not be fighting, but they with their weapons may kill me, because they have not realized the great intentions that I have. But then he says, that would be far better for me. In other words, he has made his position very, very clear to Krishna that he does not want to fight. But Swamiji points out here, the word he uses does not show that he is willing to die for this peace. He actually wants to be safe. He wants to be in a safer situation. By demonstrating that he is willing to make the great sacrifice. So, the word used is kshemataram. It is far better for me. The word kshema, Swamiji points out, is used for a physical well-being. Even in Gujarati, we meet somebody, they will ask each and say, Bhai Badu Kusal Kshem to Chena. Kushal, easy. Kshema, safe. So Badu Garma Barabar Chena. You know. Kshema means everything is physically comfortable and safe. So you see, if he is really was interested in greater, higher achievement, he will say moksha. It will be liberation for me. If these people kill me with the weapons in their hand and me not protesting at all, practicing ahimsa, if they kill me, I will get liberation. Isn't that the bombers who destroy themselves? That when you die, you will go to Jannat, you will go to Swarga. Because that's the greater goal, whether that is right or wrong, but that's a greater goal to convince somebody to give up his life. Here Arjuna says, I'll be kshemataram. It will be far better for me. So Swami says it shows that he has lost all his strength and power, both mentally and physically. And he has become complete coward at this time. And now Sanjaya, in the concluding verse of chapter 1, tells Dhritarashtra what's happening in the battlefield. Sanjaya uvacha, eva muktva arjunaha sankhe, rathopastha upavishat, visrujya sasharam chapam, shoka samvignamanasaha. Having thus spoken in the middle of the battlefield, Arjuna sat down on the seat of the chariot, casting away his bow and arrows with a mind distressed with sorrow. He's completely broken down. He let the bow and arrow fall. He sat down, probably holding his head. That's where we end chapter 1. And we shall start chapter 2 next time. This is where the real teachings of Bhagavad Gita starts.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shantihi, Shantihi, Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.